Hi everyone! Welcome back to Southern Ghost Stories, where we talk about some of the most haunted places in the South. I'm your host Chelsea, along with Alan.
Hey there!
We hope you enjoyed our last podcast on the Thomas House in Red Boiling Springs, Tennessee. If you're interested in finding out more information about the hotel or other haunted locations around Middle Tennessee, check out our Nashville Ghost Map app, which allows you to customize your own ghost tour along with several of our book's Southern Ghost Stories. Today, we are going to head back down south to Savannah to talk about the old Gribble House. Alan, can you go ahead and give us a little background on the building?
Originally, the Gribble House was owned by Eliza and Robert Gribble, who moved from England to Savannah before the Civil War. Happily married with children, the Gribble family lived on the outskirts in Frogtown, which was a small area within Savannah. However, after her husband passed away and her children grew up, Eliza, then in her early 70s, decided to turn the home into a boarding house and rent out the empty rooms to women who needed a place to stay. One of the rooms belonged to her daughter, Carrie Olander, who had fallen on hard times after separating from her husband. She would help her mother run the boarding home. Another woman who lived in the house with Eliza and Carrie was Maggie Hunter. Like Carrie, Maggie was also in her mid-30s and separated from her husband, but she actually left him because he had physically abused her.
One of the most brutal crimes in the history of Savannah took place on December 10, 1909, when a patrolman making his rounds heard moaning coming from the house of Eliza Gribble. When he went inside to see what was going on, he found Maggie was still alive but barely hanging on to life. As he walked through the home to see if her attacker was still there, he stumbled onto a lifeless, bloody Eliza lying on the floor, beaten to death inside the home. Alongside her was daughter Carrie. The murder weapon was presumed to be a bloody axe that was found inside the home. Unfortunately, the only lead the police had was from a neighbor who told them he saw an African-American man running from the house the night of the murders. The local newspaper published the story about the murders, causing chaos and panic in the town, so much that a lynch mob searched the streets for the killer, as described by a neighbor, an African-American male. Over 150 African-American men were rounded up and put in jail. The town was in such an uproar that local African Americans went to the police and asked to be locked up, not because they committed the crime, but because they felt like they were going to be lynched and they would be safer in jail. In all, over 200 African American men spent the night after the crime in the Savannah jail.
But even though a witness had pegged an African American, police had their eyes on a man named William Walls. Walls was not only dating Maggie, he was also her cousin. He had been seen at the house in the past, and law enforcement identified him as the main suspect after he was seen with a bad scratch on his face in town. When the police searched his home, they found a gray sweater and a sports coat that had bloodstains on it. Walls was arrested and charged with murder. A local African-American man named John Cooker was also arrested after he confessed to the murder. But police would eventually find out that he made up the story and was nowhere near the crime scene on the day of the murder.
However, as Maggie lied on her deathbed, she told a local minister that the man who killed Eliza and Carrie was her husband, J.C. Hunter. Hunter was a former Confederate soldier who was 30 years older than Maggie. Police took him into custody and conducted a search of his home, where they discovered bloody clothing and rags hidden in his fireplace. Despite maintaining his innocence, a grand jury indicted Hunter, along with Walls and Cooker, for all three murders in February 1910. Walls and Cooker were eventually released and never put on trial. However, Hunter was convicted 6 months later and sentenced to death in December 1911. The day before his execution, Hunter was baptized by the same priest who heard his wife state he was the killer 2 years prior. Later that day, he received news that his sentence had been reduced to life in prison.
Now, there are a couple interesting things to note about the story. Hunter admitted he had done some maintenance work and hung wallpaper in the Gribble house a few years before the murders, so he was familiar with the home and its surroundings. Maggie also supposedly told a local insurance salesman a few days before the murder that she didn't think she would live past the weekend, and actually inquired about a policy payout in the event she was murdered. Guess who was the beneficiary of the life insurance? You guessed it, her ex-husband, J.C. Hunter. Hunter maintained his innocence, and some even believed he may not have committed the murders, since he had people who actually vouched for his alibi and said he was nowhere near the Gribble house while the murders were taking place. In 1916, a man named J.B. Garvin was making small talk with a police officer in New Mexico. The officer just happened to be from Savannah, and when Garvin found that out, he mentioned he was the person who killed the three women at the Gribble house. Garvin said the murders had weighed heavily on him, and he wanted to get it off his chest. He went into great detail about the crime scene and the boarding house, but ultimately he was written off as a crazy person.
A year later, a man named W.O. Bradley went into a police station in El Paso, Texas, and confessed to the murder of three women at the Gribble house. He told officers that he and an accomplice were robbing the house when the three women came home and caught them. The two men murdered the women and fled Savannah for New Orleans, where they laid low for a while. As time went on, Bradley felt badly for what he had done and had to confess. Unfortunately for J.C. Hunter, Bradley was written off as a crazy person with a mental disorder, despite having in-depth knowledge of how the three women were killed. Hunter would eventually be pardoned in 1931 and was allowed to return to Savannah, where he'd live the rest of his life.
In 1941, the Gribble house was torn down, and a large warehouse was built on top of where the murders took place years earlier. Employees of the warehouse have been known to hear strange noises from time to time, and some have even claimed to see apparitions in the new building.
We hope you enjoyed the episode on the old Gribble house. If you would like to learn more about haunted locations around Savannah, download the Savannah Ghost Map app in iTunes and Google Play. Also, be sure to check out our website, southernghoststories.com, which not only features our apps, but also several of our books. Feel free to leave a comment or send us a message on our Facebook or Instagram accounts. Let us know about any creepy experiences you may have had. And feel free to give us some ideas on new locations you'd like to hear about on future shows.
And those books Chelsea mentioned are Southern Ghost Stories Historical Hauntings, Ghosts of Gallatin, Murfreesboro, Spirits of Stones River, and Haunted Hotels. And check out our Facebook page because we have an event coming up in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, on the square there at Nani's Bakery. It's October 23rd. Now be sure to subscribe and leave a 5-star review. Those reviews are very helpful, and we really appreciate everyone who's taken a few minutes to do it for us. Please check back with us next time as we head back to New Orleans to talk about the Beauregard Kai's house.
We hope.
We do hope. Very much so.
If you're interested in finding out more information about the hotel or other haunted locations around Middle Tennessee, check out our Nashville Ghost Map app, which allows you to customize your own ghost tour along with our books, Southern... I don't know if I can continue now.
Do you need to take a break?
No.
It only took you 30 minutes to get through the first paragraph.
I was on such a good roll before you criticized me.
I offered you some constructive criticism to make you better. Even better than you already are, which is pretty magnificent.
Aw, and that's sweet.